Welcome to the Midweek F1 podcast. This is the show that is the last look at the race just gone, the first look at the race coming up. So naturally, we're having a look at the Mexican Grand Prix. I'm Nicola Hume, I'm your host. And as always, I am joined by F1's legendary go-to audio amigo, Ben Edwards. Ben, what colour would you choose for your Mexican wrestling mask?
It's got to be blue. It's got to be blue, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's always blue for me. Yeah.
Now, if you've only just found our podcast, where on earth have you been? We've been doing this all season. But if you are watching on YouTube, then click subscribe and click the bell button. Then you get notifications every time a new video goes live. If you're listening, click follow. I think that's all the things. Over to you, Ben.
Well, Mexican Grand Prix. There is so much to talk about really getting into this because Lando Norris now leads the championship by 1 point. And although he had a dominant race, there was so much else going on behind him. So we've got plenty to talk about.
Yes. So naturally, we've decided to bring in our guest right from the get-go. Yeah. So please welcome to the show, the Luke Skywalker to Ben's Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yes, he's back. It's Five Live and Sky F1 commentator Harry Benjamin.
Hello, T. Thank you very much for having me back.
You're right.
I'm all right. Yeah. Right. I'm a bit tired, but I'm here. Good race. I'm buzzed for
the rest of the season.
Yeah. I've had two coffees.
Yeah. So. He's wired.
Good stuff. Well, it's great to have you back with us, Harry. And of course, I will need to get your thoughts on because we're going to go into what the stewards were up to, because there were some slightly odd decisions made, but we'll get into that a little bit later on, if that's okay.
Yes. Then we have our midweek championship of the world. We'll see how well everyone did on points. One spoiler alert from my behalf.
Well, mine wasn't great. But we'll dive straight into what we might expect in the next race as well after that in Brazil, because Brazil is always a really key competition. The Interlagos circuit, Max Verstappen can be dominant in the wet. Although I was looking it up, I think it'll be dry next week. So we shall see. But yeah, lots to talk about.
Yeah, so Mexico. I mean, it didn't disappoint. Very entertaining race, I think. Actually, it was one of the first ones that my husband stayed up and watched it with me. Normally, he watches the first couple of laps because he couldn't care less.
Round of applause.
I know, Scott stayed up. Normally, he's just like, oh, this is boring. But he actually stayed up and watched the entire thing because he was enjoying the strategies. He was enjoying the penalties being thrown out left, right and centre. And then the random virtual safety car at the end, which we will be discussing later on. It was a wild one.
It was surprising in many ways because sometimes the Mexican Grand Prix can be a race where there's really no overtaking. It's a tough one to overtake. Yeah. And we could see that, you know, there were a lot of attempts that didn't quite come off, but there were also some really good passes and strategies that worked, interestingly. And yet Lando Norris dominated. We'll talk about that in a moment. But also what's interesting in the Constructors' Championship, this, you know, we know McLaren, dominant. They've now got more than double the points of anybody else.
That's crazy.
It's incredible. They're already the champions. But who's going to be second, third and fourth? Because Ferrari just 1 point ahead of Mercedes, only 10 points ahead of Red Bull. Those three teams all fighting to be the next best. And then further down the order, you've got battles going from sixth to ninth. And in fact, that was interesting that Sauber lost out to Haas because they had been behind them. But a brilliant performance by Oliver Bearman that really helped Haas move up in the order. So in the Constructors' Championships, there's plenty to go on. But of course, it is the Drivers' Championship that we're really going to be getting into.
Yeah. I do have a question quickly before we move over to producer Jim for our normal questions where we discuss the race. But when it comes to constructors, obviously that's all about money. So what's the actual money difference between coming second and coming third? Do we know?
I don't think anyone knows the exact specific numbers that you get for wherever you finish. But between each position, there's tens of millions difference in dollars in terms of prize money.
So fighting for second is still a huge deal compared to coming third.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But that's why for those midfield teams as well, fighting for sixth when you're currently eighth is equally as massive, I'd say, for those guys.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Producer Jim.
Okay, let's start with the first corner. Hamilton gets a run on Leclerc, but Max gets a run on both of them. 3-1 doesn't work. Was Max lucky to not crash? And was Leclerc lucky not to get a penalty? Discuss.
Oh, I think Max actually not crashing was brilliant. I mean, his driving style, to be able to do that, I would have seen other drivers trying to do that and crash into the barrier. He did that amazingly. He then got himself back onto the road, and then there was that bit of a battle, and he did let Hamilton through, which he kind of needed to do that, I think. Yes. Otherwise, I think there would have been a penalty of some sort. It was crazy, that first corner, wasn't it? I mean, there were so many cars going off.
I think you've got to make it gravel.
Yeah.
It's grass at the moment. It's almost inviting you to cut the corner. George Russell was probably the most aggrieved by what happened.
Yes.
Because he felt like Verstappen basically just decided to cut the corner and gain a huge advantage. It was nip and tuck because when we rode on board with Max Verstappen, it was only millimetres away from the wall.
Yeah.
But he was still travelling at fast speed in practically a straight line. So he has that kind of momentum back on the exit of turn three, down that short drag towards four. So I can understand why George Russell felt particularly aggravated on that front. Equally, Charles Leclerc cut the corner at three as well, but immediately gave the position back to Lando Norris.
But he didn't give it back to his teammate Lewis Hamilton. I was a bit surprised because Lewis was actually ahead of him. Well, he wasn't ahead of him, but they were very much together as they went down into that first corner. But he didn't get any penalty for it. Fair enough, in a way.
But this is the thing. If you make it gravel, you're not having any of these kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to be much more careful. But equally, if it is gravel, are we going to enjoy four cars going wide into turn or going four wide into turn one?
Yeah.
I don't know. The two Ferraris made contact at one point with the two wheels going face to face as they were squeezed right in between with what Lando Norris on the inside and Verstappen basically braking too late and then bottoming out on the curb and then having to go across the grass out of control. Look, I saw it all, obviously, called it all, and I thought that was going to be a hard one for the stewards to try and decide because it wasn't only the front runners that went off. We had cars in the back as well cutting the corner.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets particularly tricky, placing everybody into where they should be. Ultimately, I think the stewards decided, obviously, it was lap one, it's Mexico,
yeah.
and that's how everyone kind of got away with
it. But it was by lap 21 that they went, okay, we're going to investigate it.
Yeah, I agree. It took too long. And the way they investigated things and what order they did it in was very confusing as well, particularly with the Hamilton and Verstappen incident, which I'm sure we'll get onto as well. I was just a bit confused as to how the stewards were taking this. But look, they have to deal with so much in race control, don't they? And you can only imagine what's going through their heads. They're having to look at the replays. They're also keeping an eye on what's going on in the Grand Prix as it's live and happening. So ultimately, I think you have to put the lap one down to a race start, racing incident, that's racing, and carry on. But I think if you just put gravel there, problem solved.
Yeah, but it was quite nice having a bit of rallycross involved though, wasn't it? Just throw some cars on the grass.
Good what fun. Would we be saying if Verstappen had gone into the wall though? Which
well,
so
I
easily could
that.
Have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could
but
have been.
But also, as a viewer, I was a bit annoyed that we didn't see replays until lap five. So I feel like we was watching it going, well, I need to see it again.
Yeah,
why
yeah,
can't
yeah.
I see it? But give me a replay. What's going on? Give me a flipping replay. I need it now. I need it now.
That is always a tricky one, though, I do think, for production, because if you come off the early laps, there can be something happening within the first few laps.
They know that there's going to be something happening on turn one. They know that that's coming. And they know that by the end of lap one, we want to see the replays immediately.
I know, yeah.
I'm just saying.
I do understand, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Producer Jim.
Okay, then it all goes off again on lap six. Max and Lewis will bang. Then Max gets through. Lewis tries to repass and goes on the grass, then gets a penalty and Max doesn't. Did the stewards get this right? Discuss.
It was a tricky one, that, because Lewis did come, as soon as he came off the grass, he did put his foot down. He didn't kind of bring himself. I feel like if he brought himself back a little bit for Max to catch up a bit, they wouldn't have looked at it so closely. But because he had then gone back onto the track and floored it, he was then further in front of Max than what he originally was. So it looked like he had gained a bigger advantage.
So this is really difficult.
Yeah.
And at the time, I felt like 10 seconds was completely disproportionate to the advantage he had seemingly gained. And I think for that incident, you've actually got to take it back to turn one. That's where it initially started.
It did, yeah.
And at one point, when they come out onto that short straight down towards turn four, I thought Verstappen might actually be giving the place back to Hamilton.
I wondered.
Yeah.
He clearly didn't, because he broke so late for the next corner. But when you take that into context as well, it's basically all one big incident, because by the time they get out to turn four, Hamilton's on the outside. He locks up, goes straight. Now, in the race director's notes, which we can get sent before a race, and they're often tweaks per race, they have specific rulings for running or run off and where you can rejoin. And this was perfect case in point. So Hamilton locked up and went so far into that runoff. He went past a little painted line, which means if you go past that line, you now have to cut back through the very, very thin bit
really
of road
thin.
Yes.
That sort of snakes back just before you come into the right-hander of turn six. And if you're Max Verstappen, though, where you still make the corner, but he, Randy, went all four wheels off, but still turned in, he is then within his rights to come back into that corner. He doesn't have to take the runoff area. He doesn't have to cut the grass. So they both run deep, either way. In my opinion, Hamilton went so deep that I don't think he stood a chance of even trying to make that runoff area, because you've got to sort of get it pinpoint sharp and cut through. He then cuts across the grass. He will, I think he loses a bit of time in doing that, but Verstappen also loses time by rejoining on the exit of four, which balks George Russell, who then has to go off wide on the exit. So yeah, that really annoys George Russell. I think on reflection, with Hamilton rejoining, and as you say, he didn't lift off massively. I think if he'd lifted off a bit more, he might have got away with it. I think a 5-second penalty might have been slightly more appropriate. I do think he did gain something, but at the end of the day, they all messed each other up. It was very messy.
Yeah.
And the ultimate winner was Oliver Bearman.
Yeah. Yes! Fantastic. Well,
now, hold your thoughts. Producer Jim.
Well, yes. My next question was, in all the craziness of Lewis versus Max, Ollie Bearman plays a blinder and nips through up to third and ends up finishing fourth. Is Ollie Bearman now rookie of the season?
Now we can discuss Ollie Bearman.
Not quite. Well, I was thinking, I thought he did a brilliant job. I was really, really impressed with what Ollie Bearman did. And particularly that time when we'll talk about this a bit more, when George Russell asked the team whether he could get past Antonelli and say, I'll go after Ollie. But when he did, he never got very close. I was just keeping an eye on the gap. It just stayed the same. Ollie Bearman kept that gap. He never got him into DRS at that stage. Later on, that changed a little bit, but that was fantastic, I thought, by Ollie Bearman. Is he the best rookie? Well, Isaac Hadjar still has a bit more in terms of points, but it's very close, and Isaac's had one podium, but now, as you say, Ollie Bearman has had a fourth place, so they are pretty closely matched, aren't they?
There's so many things to look at here, I think, and I loved that race from Bearman. I thought it was a proper statement drive, and to go wheel to wheel with Max Verstappen, opportunistic at its finest, and he didn't back off because it was Max Verstappen, and he held his nerve, even on the way to the quick left-hander of seven before it then goes into the S's. If you remember, that's where last year it was Lando Norris and Max Verstappen fighting, and we had all the driver guidelines nonsense. So Verstappen, no matter who it is in the car next to him, does not give an inch, even if he's on the back foot. So I thought Bearman held his nerve there. And again, the pace was strong, keeping Russell and the Mercedes behind, and Piastri towards the end as well, right? I thought a podium was there. Ultimately, when he switched to the two-stop to cover off, I think, George Russell and the Mercedes, who also switched, that then went away. But I think he's definitely a contender for Rookie of the Year. But for me, Hadjar still has it just above him. Mm-hmm. But if Bearman continues this consistency to the end of the year, there's a strong case. I think Bearman rocketed up from 18th to 13th in the Drivers' Championship now. He's absolutely outclassing Esteban Ocon. Has brought an upgrade, let's remember, last weekend in Austin. So could this be also a Haas car that's improved overall as well? And if we just think back to Australia and what a pretty terrible weekend it was for Ollie Bearman, big crash in, I think it was qualifying, and it was just a really rough weekend. And all the rookies have had rough weekends.
Yeah.
It's indicative of a rookie season, right? But he, I think, in that race showed that he is one that will be with a top team in the next few years, whether it's Ferrari or someone else.
I do have, it was the interview with him in the media pen afterwards, and he was so emotional. And he said, I've always dreamed of racing right up against Max Verstappen, and it happened. Then he got all emotional. Then the camera sort of panned around. Then it's on his family is standing there crying.
Everyone's crying.
It was so lovely. And he just seems like such a sweet boy.
I'm in a way, I'm a bit gutted that it wasn't a podium, because obviously that would have been an amazing story for Bearman, but also for Haas, who, I was going through the stats, I think they've done 209 races now in their career since they became a constructor. And they are, I think that's the longest a team has gone without a podium second longest. Minardi is the only one that pips them at the moment. And their equal best result is fourth place with Romain Grosjean in Austria in 2018. And there's a great selfie, because Grosjean was on the ground in Mexico, I think working for French TV. It's a great selfie of him with Bearman, congratulating him and going, you know, fourth place men for Haas. But Haas are the only team in the ground effect era not to score a podium. I mean, they have zero podiums to their name. So I kind of wanted them to get a podium just to get that off their back. Yet, four races, two sprints still to go.
Who knows? Producer Jim.
Okay, behind Behrmann was the Mercedes pair with a very sweary George Russell. After some spicy radio, the team swapped the drivers too late and lost out to Piastri and Behrmann. What is going on with the Mercedes management? Discuss.
Am I the only one that just finds it funny when you hear George Russell swearing? It just doesn't suit his face.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, he started the weekend well, didn't he? In a Lucha Libre mask on the Friday in the Forest Hall, going unnoticed, but then had to put a selfie on the gram as well to let everyone know he was
naturally.
Ultimately, that decision was too little too late, as far as I was concerned. I understand George Russell's frustrations. I think they should have swapped it much earlier. I'm sure they'll have their reasons. Some of them might be political. I don't know. But Russell has every right, because Antonelli wasn't catching Behrmann. I think Behrmann was holding him about 1.5, 2 seconds. And Russell's been the quicker driver all year. Mm-hmm. And he even said, you know, I'll give the position back if I can't get him. And that's what ultimately happened. But I think overall, Mercedes weren't really in the hunt this weekend. And I think that they'll be more concerned by that.
Well, also, I mean, they're still saying mathematically George Russell is in the running for the championship. So really, you need to kind of still favour him as your number one driver within the team. But there was no Toto this weekend.
No, that's right. So that obviously makes a difference to the decisions that are being made a little bit. But even so, I think, yeah, it was all just a bit too delayed, wasn't it? It was just, they just needed to get on with it a bit more quickly. Mm.
Even if Toto's not there in person, you know he's on he's on the phone.
It's got
he's classic. I mean, no one wears them anymore, but he's classic sort of Bluetooth earpiece.
Yeah, the one that's
on
like
the
that.
Go. Yeah. Like wherever he is, he's dialed into the team. He knows exactly what's happening.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely.
Producer Jim.
Okay, driver championship focus one. Another tough session for Oscar, but recovered to fifth and made some big overtakes. Psychologically, now he's second in the championship. Will it be easier to be the hunter rather than the hunted? Discuss.
I was wondering this, you know. I was wondering maybe the last few races, it's just kind of, it's got to him a little bit. He's been struggling to kind of keep up his pace. Because if we were talking about Oscar 6 races ago, we'd be like, oh yeah, the championship's in the bag. He's absolutely going to win this thing. But the last few races, you're like, what on earth is going on?
It was a bit strange, wasn't it? In terms of qualifying in particular. I mean, the race, he seemed to do a better job. But of course, overtaking, as we know, is so difficult there. But qualifying, he just did not have that pace. And it was really interesting hearing from the team that they've analysed everything. The cars are the same, they say. And basically, he just wasn't quite getting... It was interesting telling us a bit about how with the tyres, sometimes that's a certain style of track and tyres suits Lando Norris a little bit better than it does Oscar Piastri. But whether that's part of Mexico, because it is a bit of a unique track, isn't it?
It looks like a low grip is not Oscar Piastri's friend.
Exactly.
When low grip conditions in Mexico and in Austin... He struggled there massively too. Maybe not as exaggerated as it was this weekend with the championship battle obviously heating up. But that clearly is an issue for him that he's not quite able to get to the bottom of. Is experience playing its hand here as well? Let's remember, Oscar Piastri's only in his third season as a Formula One driver.
Absolutely.
Lando Norris is going on 7. Max Verstappen's a decade in and has the old 4 world championships in the back pocket as
just
well.
A couple, yeah.
So is that just starting to rear its head a little bit? And is that experience just you know, with low grip and the fact that Lando Norris particularly excels when there's low grip, just kind of exaggerates it a little bit? I actually think losing the championship lead at this stage could really be a good thing for Piastri. Yeah, it's only a point as well. But now he is the hunter. Mm. And he, in a way, having had a run of rough results, I think this will gee him up for the rest of the year. And I think, you know, we get to places like Brazil could be good, but I think Qatar will be particularly good for McLaren. And Abu Dhabi as well. Vegas is the one that might be a bit of an outlier. We'll see. That could be a really strong Mercedes track. But I think this will gee him up towards the end of the year, because I still think he's got such a strong mentality. But and he's got a great support system around him as well. Let's remember, Mark Webber manages him and pretty much oversees the day-to-day running as well. So I think that could be really good. But if you're going to rank, you know, your top 4 drivers so far this season, right now, Where are you putting Piastri all of a sudden?
I don't know.
Because at one time, at one stage, he was very much
clear number one.
He was number one.
Clear number one.
But the last few races, it just hasn't come together for him, has it? And he's been a bit frustrated, you can see, as you say. But I noticed in his junior career, he won a few titles when he was just leading the championship, but it was under huge pressure and he dealt with it quite well. And that's given him a bit of confidence, I think, that as long as he's up there, as long as he's still part of it, he can still do it. He's not given up. But he really, as you say, he needs to make it happen in these next few races. Just one point between them. Amazing.
Four races, two sprints. Yeah. Oh, it's so exciting.
It's tantalising, isn't
it? Yeah,
it
is.
Oh, producer Jim.
Okay, driver championship focus two. Red Bull go for medium tyres at the start, which looked the wrong way to go. Then Max comes alive in the second half of the race and hunts down Charles for second. Did the strange VSC cost Max second place? Discuss.
Yes, it did.
I think it's quite likely, to be honest. He was so perfectly positioned, wasn't he?
Oh, I mean, that the virtual safety car was such a tricky situation because it obviously affected Oscar and Max at the same time because Oscar was fighting for P4 there. He was very close and it just seemed like that last lap meant so much to the both of them. Max almost had it. And then I genuinely stood up and screamed at the telly when I saw that everything go yellow down that left-hand side of the screen. I was like, yeah!
Tried doing the commentary.
Yeah, so frustrating.
That must have been fun.
But I think at one point, it's like, round the final quarter, we've got two laps to go, and there's a VSC! Race neutralised! And we didn't see on the pictures that were given in the commentary box, which is exactly the same as you'll see at home. We have no idea who it's for. And then, you know, I get word, my producer tells me, we think it's Sainz, and you see Sainz is falling down the timing tower. He's in on the driver track. He's pulled off somewhere. But that you're trying to see, oh, how quick is this VSC going to go away? Are we going to get half a lap dash to the end? I think Piastri wasn't going to get Behrmann.
No, I think that was tougher.
Yeah. And I think actually that still, what I should have said when we talk about Piastri is, I think still a great salvage job for him, either way.
Yes.
Verstappen, I think, would have got Leclerc, but I think it still would have been close.
It would.
But you know what? I think at the end of the day, the VSC was called for safety reasons, and I find it very difficult to argue against that. And these things happen in Formula One. Sometimes the luck has to go your way, and it went Charles Leclerc's way after what was a sterling drive anyway. Good qualifying.
Yeah.
I think he still deserved second place.
Yeah.
Did it rob us of a last lap overtake? Maybe. But, you know, that's Formula One at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's why virtual safety cars are there. Carlos Sainz had a spin, hit the wall. I think a majority of his cars seem to be behind a barrier in the Forosol. But I think from what we can tell, I've only seen an onboard. And I think the rear was still on the runoff where a marshal or two would be required to kind of show themselves on the runoff area. And therefore, they are on the track.
Yeah.
And you can't have that.
And I do want to give a shout out to my main man, Max, because afterwards he was being interviewed about it. And he's got a different head on his shoulders now. Like, he's such a grown-up now that he's a dad. Because he was just like, you know, you would expect an angry Max. But he was like, you know, I mean, safety cars have worked in my favour in the past and sometimes they don't. It happens. Yeah. Let's move on.
I mean, I didn't want to bring up Abu Dhabi 2021, but...
he also kind of brought it up himself, so it's fine.
These things happen.
These things happen. Producer Jim.
Driver Championship Focus 3. A perfect weekend for Lando puts him top of the championship by 1 point from Oscar and 36 from Max. Is this now his championship to lose? Discuss.
It's just unpredictable. It's fun. I mean, you've got the two McLaren drivers, as you say, separated by a point. You've got Max still in the mix, as you said, with four Grand Prix, but two sprint races as well. So there are some real opportunities here. I think we just absorb it. And we're in such a lucky place, in a way, to enjoy this last part of the season.
It feels like it's been a while since it's been juicy like this.
Yeah.
I mean, we were kind of sort of kidding ourselves towards the end of last year, weren't we, with Lando Norris slowly chipping away at Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that wasn't going to come to anything, and it didn't. And I think we should enjoy it now, because next year, big old reset.
It's
we could
well
see one run away with it,
yeah.
As we tend to do when there's such a big change. One team will get it right, the rest won't. I think, it is Lando's to lose, because he's now in the lead, but it's only 1 point. Max Verstappen is closing, but Verstappen needs to win pretty much every single race and sprint to the end of the year now. Or if he doesn't, he has to hope Lando and Oscar have bad races. So,
which again all of those things are possible.
All of those things are possible. I think Brazil, I haven't checked the weather, but you said you had, Ben.
I had a quick look, and it doesn't look as though it's going to be particularly wet. There's a chance of very light rain, nothing too serious at the moment.
Okay, if the rain increases...
Max will win.
I'm hedging my bets on a Max.
I can understand that. I know,
If it doesn't, it will be harder with the McLarens in the fun, in the mix. Vegas, I think, has got Mercedes written all over it.
Yeah.
Cooler temperatures. Qatar, I think, will be another stronghold for McLaren. So again, Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. And then Abu Dhabi could be anyone's guess as well. But turn one, lap one, so many things can happen. And I do think Lando is now in the best position. Or is it?
His start, just a quick point that we haven't really said, that start that he made in Mexico was one of the best starts I've seen him do. And earlier this year, we were still thinking, Lando isn't that great off the line sometimes. But the last few races I've seen, he's done some really good starts. And the way, it wasn't just the wheel spin, it was just the traction. It was beautifully done. And Mexico, it's so often, if you're on pole, you get past going into turn one. He did it so well.
He kept level-headed as well. Yeah. When everyone was going wide around him, Charles Leclerc took the lead by cutting the corner. He still kept calm. He knew, you know, he kept clean. He knew that that would come back to him. And I think that's quite indicative of maybe a switch in mentality as well. Mm. Something we were questioning a lot earlier in the year, right? And I think he himself even said he was starting to doubt whether he had what it took to fight for a championship, because when his teammate is winning, Lando Norris can't exactly have an excuse because the car's not good enough, because clearly it is. Mm. So now that has switched round with the more experience he has in the car, momentum builds. This could be very, very good for Lando Norris.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love it so much. Right. Social media. There's been a lot going on over the weekend. I would like to, first of all, give an honourable mention to George Russell, because during FP1, he went incognito because he wasn't on track.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was so good. Oh, you brought it up.
It was so good.
You did, yeah. How dare you ruin my moment where I was going to tell everyone the story. But he put on a Mexican mask and went into the crowd to go and watch FP1, to go and see the cars on track, and no one knew. I mean, loved it.
Great.
It was so good.
But how great, though, because I think he was like, when was the last time I actually sat in a grandstand and watched cars going round?
Exactly. You know?
And to sit there must be incredible in that sort of baseball stadium where I think the capacity is about 25,000 people. Yeah. Sort of park concert, park racetrack, really. It must have been incredible.
Then on the way out, he walked past a couple of fans with George Russell t-shirts and went, good driver.
That is a bit cringy, though.
But the main focus this morning, while I was on the train having a scroll on the way here this morning, everyone, I know we're going to be discussing the stewards later on, but everyone is sharing that onboard footage from Liam Lawson. Now, during, I think it was under a yellow flag anyway, but the marshals came out on track and he swore and said, I could have effing killed them. Because actually, if you watch that footage, it's so close. I know they're at a slower speed, but that was really unsafe, a really bad call. I don't know who made that call, but I know because he had pitted. So he was slightly further back from everyone else. So maybe they just kind of assumed there was no one on track. Everyone's over the other side. It's fine. Let's go for it. Then the next thing you know, here comes Liam. He could have hit them. He could have hit them.
I there was a big old statement released by the FIA at the end of the race, which, if I'm quite honest, I read it and I was like, what's this referring to? Because we didn't see any of that on the TV during the race.
This is something you can now find on social media, but it wasn't out at the time. Yeah.
So sort of playing catch up a little bit, and I was like, what on earth is going on? And then this all unfolded. And obviously Lawson picked up damage on lap one. And then there was already debris in that grassy area and off the line, which they put yellow flags out, double yellows initially, giving the signal to the marshals to go on to the track and get that once all the cars had gone past. They said as soon as it had become apparent that Liam Lawson had come into the pit lane to change his front wing and then get to the pit exit, as soon as that they became aware of that, there was a notice to the marshals saying, clear the track, car coming. Obviously, that notice came too late, and we got what we got with two marshals dashing to get off the track. Thankfully, nothing happened. But and this is the thing stewards are juggling all the time. It's just a reminder of how dangerous this sport can be.
It can be, yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I think they are, as you say, they're looking into it a little bit more. And I sort of understand how it happened. And to be fair, I mean, it's worth having a look at, but Lawson was aware of them as he came out. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't going completely mad or flat out, even though he came up with those comments. Yeah. That, oh, this could have been horrible.
Yeah.
So, top drivers have to keep their eyes open. That's what's part and parcel.
Well, they're always looking at the next apex, aren't they?
That's
amazing where they're looking.
But awareness is such a big part of being a top driver. So,
if you want to see the clip, it's literally everywhere on social media while you're there. We are Midweek F1, by the way. If you want to give us a little follow, that's nice. And then also while you're there, open up the YouTube app. Although you're probably listening to this, it doesn't make sense. If you're already listening to this and watching this, then click subscribe. If you're on social media and then you follow Midweek F1, then also then go onto YouTube and click subscribe and click the bell button. And then go onto your podcast app and then click follow. Then I think that's all of the above.
Are you guys on like Bebo or MySpace or anything?
Let's see, MySpace.
I never had any
Friends
of those accounts.
Reunited.
The Facebook.
Harry, look, it's great to have you with us. And you've been to such a number of events this year. And when you're there, you also can get involved in the sort of feeling, the emotion that's going on within the paddock. And I just wanted to get a feeling from you about how it's all coming together at the moment with this battle for three drivers, two different teams for the Drivers' Championship. So two drivers for McLaren, one for Red Bull, fighting for the championship. What is the sort of mood within the paddock? Where, from other people, from people in racing, from people on the side of it? What are you feeling from it all?
I think there's a genuine belief that Max Verstappen could take this world championship.
Okay.
Ooh. Out of sheer consistency and the fact he is Max Verstappen. And look, while we've just been saying what a brilliant race it was from Lando Norris, you know, it's not been the most consistent throughout a year. But now we're seeing that as well with Oscar Piastri. So people are starting maybe to have doubts as to whether Norris and Piastri, despite having the best car on the grid, have quite the maybe experience level of fighting for a championship in order to take it. And in them squabbling, not helped with all the papaya rules and the fairness and all of this stuff that's been going on, not helped by that one bit. As far as I'm concerned, it's probably a distraction for drivers as well. Is that going to allow Max Verstappen to come in and sneak this world championship? And if it does, that will be seismic.
It might be his
best world championship to date. And what a loss that will be for McLaren. You know, they spent so long focusing on trying to get a constructors' title. They've done that. And you can't take that away from him. Two on the trot. Fantastic. The turnaround from that team is incredible. Andrea Stella and Zak Brown are absolutely brilliant at leading that team and everybody who runs it. But if they could somehow lose out on this Drivers' Championship, Constructors is great for the team, but everyone only cares about the Drivers' Championship. That's the one really that carries the most prestige. If they can't get that, then I think that's going to be hard to come back from.
That's an interesting point, absolutely. I mean, as you say, Lando Norris did a very good job over the weekend. But Mexico, as we know, is a slightly unusual track anyway. We might get different performances when we go to these other tracks, mightn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Two sprints included in that. And who's always good in a sprint?
Yeah.
Max Verstappen.
Max is always good on sprints, yeah.
If it rains in Brazil, which even though the conditions say no, but Interlagos, what is it, sort of in between lakes, isn't that the translation of it or something like that?
The
weather can change very quickly and we're still, you know, over a week away. All it takes, was it last year, 17th to the win?
It was, yeah.
Incredible. I mean, we had two Alpines on the podium as well. Could you imagine that happening
it
now?
It was the greatest Max moment
ever. It was incredible. It was incredible. Yeah. And actually, Brazil's produced some amazing races over the last couple of years. So I'm really excited to see how that one unfolds. But the bottom line is, you cannot call it. And I think that's ultimately what most people in the paddock are saying, is you cannot call this. You have to live from race to race right now. And whereas in years gone by, you can kind of predict, oh, I think the championship might be done by around Qatar, maybe Vegas. Now, you don't know. You rock up on a Friday and you have absolutely no idea who might come out on top on Sunday, because there's so many mitigating factors to look into.
I agree. Good stuff.
Oh, what a ride.
Exhausted.
Absolutely brilliant.
So, lots to look forward to. But we need to talk about, and of course, the thing we want to do talk about is some of the aspects we've already mentioned, but I want to go into a bit more detail, because the stewards' decisions over this last weekend, and of course, they could affect what you're talking about, the championship fight going through these remaining four races and the sprint races. The steward decisions can be absolutely crucial sometimes, can't they? And what do you think, both of you, about the decisions that were made this weekend? Because some of them were a bit random, weren't they?
I mean, it felt like the stewards was just like, being hosted by Oprah Winfrey. You get a penalty. You get a penalty. You get a penalty. Because he was just throwing them out to Lewis Hamilton. Then Carlos Sainz got one for speeding in the pit lane as well, didn't he?
Yeah, but that was a technical issue, I gather, in the end with the car.
But it just felt all over the place. And it was like, no, you can go on the grass, but you can't go on the grass. But you can, but you can't. But you can, but this guy can't.
And there were very few from turn one, which actually, because you say there were lots, but actually I was quite surprised there were none, really, from that first corner.
I think it got a bit too complicated. And they thought, actually, you know what? Let's just write that.
I can understand that. Yeah.
And then it was 20 laps later. Okay, now we'll have a little look at that thing. It just felt all over the place.
Yeah, I agree. It was a bit frazzled, I think. I think the one that got everybody, obviously, was that robbed us was the call to put the VSC out at the end. Yeah. Some people thought, why?
Yeah.
The car seemed to be in a safe place, as I said. But I don't have too much of a gripe with that. I did, as I say, have a gripe with a 10-second time penalty. I think maybe he should have got something. Maybe 5 seconds would have done it. And that would have been fine. Ultimately, Hamilton didn't really have the pace for a podium either way. So that one sorted itself out. I don't know. I just think ultimately what we saw was a bunch of racing incidents, quite frankly, overall. Yes. And that's kind of how they should have all been taken, in my opinion.
And we always have this question of, should we have the same stewards at every event or should we have different stewards? And there are two mixes to this, because I do know that some stewards might favour a certain driver or a certain team. And if they were always doing the decisions, that might upset other teams. On the other hand, having different stewards, you always get slightly different responses, don't you?
But if they're favouring a certain team, they shouldn't be a blooming steward. It's just as simple as that. Yeah. It's like football refereeing.
And I haven't seen much favouring, to be fair. I haven't seen much favouring in recent times.
I just think it needs to be a blanket set of people doing every single race.
I'm inclined to agree with you, because consistency is best. It's an unpaid position.
Yeah.
It's a voluntary position. And there are always at least a couple of consistent stewards that do a few races in a row and then they have a few races off. So there's normally one steward from the previous round that carries over. But it's not always the case. And I think part of the reason it's unpaid, or at least this is what they're claiming, is that that means no one sort of, no one can be kind of bought in any kind of way. And so that will ensure neutrality.
If we pay no one, it's fine.
is the saying. And I just think it should be a paid position. Where's the money going to come from? I think Zach Brown's even said, well, if all the teams just club together, we'll pay for it. It won't be much, you know, to pay for four people's salaries out of a Formula One team's budget. I think they'll be all right.
Yeah.
So I don't see why they can't do that.
One team might give more than the other.
Well, no, you'd have to keep it even. But then again, can you find four people who can commit to 24 races in a year? Teams don't do that. Broadcasters don't do that.
Only the drivers do,
but they're flying around in private jets and having their massages as soon as they get off the plane.
No, that's true.
You know, your number one mechanic's not getting that. So you know, there are those factors to think
so
about
we
too.
Pay their salary and then give them a massage and then it should be fine.
Yeah, done.
Okay. Great stuff. All right, guys, we've got to start looking ahead and we've got to think about what's going to happen in Brazil. And we've already talked a little bit about how Max Verstappen was so dominant in that amazing race last year. But bear in mind, he's won three in Brazil in the last five events in Brazil. So for Max, it's looking very strong. Do we think, you know, with him being a bit further away in the points, this is one of his chances to score back up?
100%. I think he has to... He has to win. It's interesting that Red Bull brought this new floor back in Monza and then they added a few new tweaks to it last week and kind of underwhelmed, really, didn't he, from qualifying and couldn't challenge for the race win. So I think they'll be looking at that and going, okay, what can we do to sort of ensure that we get the maximum out of the package we've got? Because unlike many other teams who have turned off the taps for upgrades a long time ago to fully focus for 2026, Red Bull are still pushing here. So I think they will look at what came out of Mexico and I think they will come back even stronger for Brazil, quite frankly. It's a Verstappen stronghold, as we said. And I think with understandings of the new tweaks that they brought to the Red Bull car could be ominous.
No. Interesting. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's
a Red Bull win regardless.
It's Max's race to win. I do think that. And I genuinely hope it does rain.
I'll tell you what, though. What was really interesting is we talk about how, you know, the top three all have something to lose now, even if Verstappen maybe has the least to lose. And on the grid in Mexico, you know, you had Piastri surrounded by rookies and Tsunoda, and you had the Ferraris. Lewis Hamilton could have got the best start from third, and was Lando going to just completely plummet back and get into that crash zone? But they were all quite bold, actually.
Yes, I agree.
And even Piastri.
That's because of constructors. They're all, they're like the Mercedes and the Ferraris up there. They're still fighting for
exactly.
things.
Exactly. But even Piastri was bold, you know, with his move on Ocon, who is, you know, a mean operator when it comes to overtaking sometimes. And he wasn't afraid to make the move when it counted. Norris held his nerve on the inside down to turn one, inside of three cars. That's brave.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, Max Verstappen, who I don't think ever gets flustered anymore. So that is really interesting and could keep the McLarens in well, they will be in the fight, but could just keep them in that extra bit of wheel-to-wheel racing that we might see going through the S's or going down towards turn four in Brazil, where the big overtaking opportunities are. So I think it's going to be exciting.
I do love the Brazil Grand Prix. I remember commentating on the 2012 one, for example.
Oh, don't get me started about
Sebastian
that race.
Vettel, Sebastian Vettel won the title again, and it was fantastic. You know, there have been some fantastic races there over all the years, haven't there? So it's got to be one we're looking forward to.
If there is one thing anyone does before Brazil, it's to rewatch the 2012 Grand Prix.
It was great.
For me, it's one of the best races of Formula One.
And if you open it up on YouTube and watch it on YouTube while you're there, make sure you subscribe to Midweek F1.
God, you're good. God, you're good. That's why they pay the big bucks, isn't it?
Right. Let's look at our Midweek Championship of the World. Now, you know how this works, Harry. We have to put in our predictions for the Brazilian Grand Prix. So you're going to get points for if you get P1, P2, P3 and fastest lap. You get them correct. 6 points, 4 points, 2 points, 1 point for fastest lap. Here is the table as it stands. Producer Jim P1 with his hands in the air.
Wow.
You've got 75 points because you got 1 point for the Russell fastest lap. Very nice. P2, team guest.
Come on,
73
guest.
Points. That's because Holly Samos got 8 points for
Holly.
Lando. And then you've got me. I got nothing.
Excellent.
Because I had a really bad week. So I'm in P3 with 66. And then Ben is in last, even though you did get points.
Some, not many.
Because you went for Charles in second place.
Yes, that's
so
right.
You did well there.
Well, yeah, I got one of them anyway.
So, the gap is 59 to 75. So it's still, I'm going to say, still anyone's game. Maybe not yours, Ben. But it's, you know.
Yeah, it's not mine.
Predictions, please. Let's go you first, Harry.
Verstappen wins.
You're correct, yes.
Piastri second.
Ooh.
Norris third.
Interesting.
Fastest lap, Russell.
That's good.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay, I can totally understand why you're going for Max for the win, but I'm actually going to go for Oscar for the win. Now, this is a bit of a risk because I think he's dipped a bit in the last
You've
couple.
Got to take big risks though, Ben.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. I have to take some risks. And also the fact that Mark Webber, of his 9 Grand Prix wins, 2 of them were in Brazil, and he backs up Oscar Piastri, so whether he can
There's
help him.
There's a theory there.
But anyway, we'll see. Oscar Piastri for the win. I'm going to go for Max second. I'll put Lando third as well. And I'll put fastest lap. No, I might go for Leclerc for fastest lap.
Okay, very nice. Okay. Max P1. He'll obviously win it. I'm going to go...
Yuki on the podium at
last. I'm going to go P2, George Russell. He just seems to keep just every now and again just popping up and going, hey guys, I still exist, by the way. Still doing my thing very quietly. So George Russell's going to randomly get a podium, go P2. P3 is going to be Oscar Piastri. I don't know what's going to happen to Lando. Fastest lap will go to Max. Jim.
Okay. I'm going with a wet race prediction.
Right, so it's Max P1.
Max P1.
Yeah.
Oscar P2. Lando P3. Fastest lap, ready? Bortoletto.
Yeah. Oh. Give the Brazilians something to smile about. Oh, yeah, I'll bat that.
So none of us.
So none of us have gone for Lando top, even though he's delivered such a great job.
Are we all subconsciously thinking we want this to go all the way to the wire?
Yeah. I do agree, yeah.
Or are we thinking he's had a good couple of weeks, he's about to
If we could just invert the championship order for the next two races, Abu Dhabi is then for sure going to be
a
firecracker.
I do think Lando's driving really well at the moment.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Lando was good. Lando was good.
And he's been on pole in Brazil.
Does this mean he's about due a mistake, though, in Lando terms?
Who knows? I think he's very strong at the moment. He seems to be right back to where he should be, you know,
Lando. For now.
But we shall see. We shall see.
Just a rogue shout out just off the back of producer Jim, Gabriel Bortoletto. Stole the final point in Mexico.
Yeah, he did.
And did a really good move on Isaac Hadjar.
Yeah.
So Bortoletto, we talk about rookies of the year so far. He's not rookie of the year yet, but he's had a really good season.
He's
so I'm a big fan of Gabby.
Yes, very nice. As is tradition on this show, we like to finish with an interesting story from our guest. Now, last time you were on the show, it was just after Japan, I think it was, and you told us a story when you put on some trousers that didn't quite fit you because you are of the taller variety.
Yes,
and they didn't fit you, and then you wore them around your knees, but then you still had your pants. Like, it was all just a bit
in a
weird.
Very posh rooftop restaurant bar thing. Yeah,
great story, worth going back and listening to that. By the way, while you're there, you might as well subscribe.
Do you get paid extra every time you give a subscription call out?
Four times I've done that. If you haven't subscribed by now, what's the point?
Have I told you about? Well, I haven't obviously told you about the time that I met Martin Brundle.
Oh, clang!
The first time I met Martin, actually, and it was in the build-up to me doing my second Sky Sports F1 commentary, which was due to be Austria last year. So I messaged Martin, and in fact I WhatsApped him. It was just the most bizarre experience of my life.
So
anyway,
weird, yeah.
I WhatsApped him because I thought we've glanced at each other in the paddock before, but you know, being as Ben will know, being a double act in a commentary box is a real challenge sometimes, and you've really got to gel with each other and build the chemistry. So I thought, well, look, I need to go and sit down with Martin if he's got time. So I messaged him and said, would you like to meet for a coffee beforehand somewhere in London and meet up and just get to know each other a bit and chat? And he very graciously agreed, and he suggested we go to Fortnum & Mason's in London.
Oh.
And I thought,
who's paying?
You say so, Martin, I'll follow your lead. Met him in London. I actually got there early, so I didn't want to look too keen, so I actually walked around the block.
I would have done the same.
But then, so this is where it happened. So I walked around the block, and as I'm approaching up from a side road, there's Martin on the phone doing deals. I don't know who he was talking to. And I was just sort of there like, oh, hi, Martin. And he's still on the phone. And I'm just like there with my backpack. I was just like, well, I've got to wait here now, haven't I?
So
I've got to loiter.
I hate it. Yeah.
So then he finishes the phone call. And then he, you know, we say hello. And then we head off to Fortnum & Mason. We go in. And it's full. Can't get a table. Can't get a table.
But so he's Martin Brundle. Can he not?
Didn't work on that occasion, sadly. So we then go, on his suggestion, to a pub round the corner. And I'm thinking, okay, sure it'll be a nice pub, you know. And he's, have we now elevated this to you know, a pint or something? And so we head round the corner, and he leads me in to the dingiest pub going. And there's a little table right by the door. And he's instantly recognised by two people, and he's always very good with his time, as Martin. So he gives them time of day. And then I go, what would you like to drink, Martin? And he says, oh, I'll just get a coffee. And I'm like, okay. Now, I'm not. This is not the kind of pub that's going to do you a cappuccino.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, well, I'll get a coffee as well. I'm not going to rock up with a pint or anything like that. So I go to the bar and I go, do you do coffee? And they do, but it's like the worst coffee you've ever had.
Nescafe.
It's Nescafe from some weird sort of box. And thankfully they had milk, so get two cups of coffee. So suddenly I'm sat in a pub down a sort of back alley in central London with a very terrible instant coffee, talking to Martin Brundle about Formula One, his career. He starts asking me about my life, and we're there for about an hour and a half just chatting over this disgusting cup of coffee.
You must have had more than one coffee over an hour.
No, made that one coffee last. Oh. And it was, I mean, it was an amazing chat, but I just couldn't help but sort of at times take in my surroundings and go, I'm in a really dingy pub with Martin Brundle talking about Formula One. And I was like, this is crazy. And this is my first proper interaction with Martin. We got like a house on fire, I'd like to say. So, and I think the commentary went quite well. So, you know, it clearly worked. No Fortnum & Mason needed. Dingy pub wins every time.
Yeah, but what were you wearing? Because you would have dressed for Fortnum & Mason. You were expecting this.
Yes, but I'm dressed well for
this.
Every occasion, Nicola, as you would know.
That's
come on.
True.
So it doesn't matter where I am. Always dressed to impress.
Oh, that just made me die inside.
Well, that's great stuff. We are now looking forward, of course. In 2 weeks' time, we'll be looking at what happened in Brazil, but we'll also be looking at what's going to happen in Las Vegas, one of the most unpredictable ones.
Vegas, baby. So make sure you subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. There's a subscribe
button. I'm going.
So if you click on that, you go. I'll deal with this. Click subscribe. There's also a bell button. If you press that, you get notifications every time a new one goes live. And then wherever you're listening to your podcast, click follow. And then that's five times I've done that in this podcast. Five.
I think if that's a follow, then an unfollow. Follow, yeah. Unfollow. Oh, no, so we're about to follow.
Oh,
now.
Good. So okay, it's fine.
No. Okay. One more time.
And we'll see you next time.
Indeed.